Good morning and welcome to Step Into the Light. We're your hosts. I'm Patty Sheen.
And I'm Jean L. Fury. Thank you for listening.
Together, we will introduce you to people who have found their way out of the dark shadows of life and back to light.
And those who, through various ministries and creative endeavors, lead others on their journey from darkness to light.
Good morning again and welcome to the show. Our guest today, Elaine Marie Cooper, has turned her passion for history into a profession as an author, a multi-award winning author. Elaine has penned 7 historical novels and written 1 memoir of her daughter. She wrote her first book, Road to Deer Run, while practicing a nursing career. Her original plan was to write just one, but like eating popcorn, it was difficult to stop at only one. Her most recent novels are Scarred Vessels, a SELA Award winner, and Love's Kindling, a SELA Award finalist. Good morning, Elaine. Welcome to Step Into the Light.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Elaine, we're delighted to have you on the show today. Thanks again.
You bet. Thank you.
So you left your nursing career 11 years ago when a most exciting event occurred in your family. Will you tell us about that?
You bet. Yeah, it was truly a very exciting event. My son called us and said, Mom, you need to sit down. And I said, well, I think I know what you're going to say because we have heard that his wife was not feeling well. And he goes, no, you better sit down. And they announced they were having triplets. And, you know, I think that everyone in the room heard me scream across the phone line. But we were quite excited when they were born. I realized, well, my son said that they needed help, so I realized I was going to either have to clone myself or stop nursing for at least a time because I couldn't do both. And the other grandma and I took turns going back and forth and every other month, so it was just a delight. They're still a delight. They're 11 years old now, so we just
love them. Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah, it is.
That is so cool to think of 3 of them at one time. Oh, my goodness.
Oh.
I'm sure that is, just a lot of excitement, probably some frustration sometimes.
Yes. A lot of excitement, a lot of diapers, and it was amazing.
Do send us a picture so we can post it, Elaine. That would be wonderful.
I will. I'll send you a copy of it. Yeah, it's really fun. I said to them, I said, I want to get a picture of me holding all 3. And they said, well, I don't think that's going to work. And I said, well, it's the only time it's going to work. If we don't do it now, I'll never fit all 3 of them on my lap.
Right.
So it was really fun to do and fun to look back on and see how much they've grown. My goodness, Lucas, one of my grandchildren, is one of the triplets, is as tall as me now. So it's really, really strange.
Wow.
Yeah, they're growing big.
Elaine, are they all girls? Obviously they're not.
No,
there's two boys
and 1 girl.
Oh,
and they're as different as could be from one another. And they all have their own personalities and likes and dislikes. And they're just like fraternal triplets would be, as they are. And just very different things that they're interested in. And they're all really smart, of course, because, you know. But they're pretty neat. They're really sweet. And I just love them. And then we have 2 more grandchildren since then, so it's pretty fun. Now we have cousins for them to play with, too, so it's great.
Oh, that is so neat. Elaine, as a person who shares the profession with you, I must ask, what field of nursing did you practice?
Well, that's a good question, especially since we have triplets. I was a mother-baby nurse.
Yeah,
I did that for a while, and then I was a WIC nurse, Women, Infants, and Children's Program. I was a school nurse for a few years, and I was also a home care nurse for children with special needs. And each one of those jobs was just, it's always more than a job. It's a profession,
yeah.
And I believe nursing is a calling. You know, you just don't go into it because you just want to, you know, make big bucks or anything, because you
exactly.
won't. But, you know, you really have to feel called into it. It's kind of like mission work, right? It's medical missionary work.
Yeah. You wrote your first book while you were still working as a nurse. What motivated you to begin writing?
Well, let's say it's kind of a strange story, because I've written since I was a little girl. And then after Bethany died, I wrote a story for, I think it was a Baptist periodical of some sort, a newspaper. And writing it, I wrote a little bit about my daughter, and writing it was so emotional that I just said, I can't do this anymore. And so I decided I wasn't ever going to write again anything. And so I literally put down my pen for 4 years. And on the fourth anniversary of Bethany's passing away, I did what I usually did on that anniversary, which was October 20th. I just hid under my bed covers and I would not come out. But on the fourth anniversary, while I was hiding under the covers, I felt more than heard a voice say, I want you to write about your ancestors in the American Revolution. And I thought, that's ridiculous. And I ignored it. But then I heard it, quote unquote, heard it again. And I thought, wait a minute, this is too strange. I'm not making this up. This is not something I ever imagined or wanted. And I didn't know what to do. I threw the covers off and I went and I found my husband and talked to him. I thought he'd for sure laugh at me, but he didn't laugh. And he said, well, let's go to the used bookstore. And I'm like, oh my goodness, he didn't laugh at me. So we went to the used bookstore and found books about the history of the era in New England. And I was off and running. I'm preparing to write my first book. It's the strangest thing. I know I always feel so weird telling people about it, because I try to tell them it wasn't an audible voice, but it was a voice. You know, it's that voice you hear in your heart, and you know it beyond a shadow of a doubt that it's the Holy Spirit speaking to you. But I've never had it so clear before. It was very strange, but it really showed me, you know, that God will use any circumstance to draw us, even if you're hiding under the bed covers.
So. And maybe especially when you're hiding under the bed covers, because he knew when he could get your attention, Elaine.
Yes, yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Because otherwise I would just hide and keep moving and keep busy, right? You just keep busy and you don't think.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
That's a beautiful story. I love that.
Oh, thank you. I always feel a little strange telling people that, because I always think they think,
you know, I believe we all have our own encounters, and they probably, I would expect we think they feel would seem strange to anybody else because they're unique to us.
True, true. But well, yeah, it spoke to me for sure.
That's awesome. So the Revolutionary War, and I have to say, before I move on to this question, kudos to your husband for not laughing, for taking a seriously.
I know.
Suggesting that you move to that you move on that day and go to the store, the bookstore, and check some things out.
Seriously.
I think that's really cool. Yeah.
I think so too. I still can't hardly believe it that he didn't think it was ridiculous, but he didn't.
Yeah.
And yes, kudos to him for sure.
God was moving in his heart as well.
Yes. Yes.
So the Revolutionary War is your favorite time period. What
is
it about this era that inspires you?
Well, it started when I was a little girl, and I lived in Massachusetts. That's where I grew up. Every time the relatives would come, we'd take them on the tour. And we'd go to Bunker Hill, and we'd go to Old North Bridge in Concord, and we'd go here, there, and everywhere and visit all the sites where the war began. I just ate it up. I just loved it. I loved the smell of old houses. I loved the old dinnerware that they used. I just loved everything about it. And when I was a little girl and there was a library there at school, I would take out books about the colonial era. So it just was fed from the time I was a little girl, you know. And then as I got older, that love did not diminish. Not that I love the war, but I love that time period. And I was fascinated by that war. And, you know, the beginnings of our country were so, so painful. And it worries me, especially now, that so many people don't see that time period as, first of all, extremely important, and second of all, as the sacrifice that it was for our country. You know, not that it was the last of the wars, but it was the most significant, because that's what established our country.
Elaine, you, I think God is speaking through people like you, because we interviewed another lady who also writes Revolutionary War historical. Remember, Jean Lee?
Oh, really?
Lynn?
Yeah.
Lynn Chigawa.
Oh, that's great.
And she expresses that same sentiment, like, so much has been lost.
Oh, my word.
Generation that needs to be retained, and it's really, really sad.
Yes. I mean, when they start tearing down statues of Lewis and Clark and Sacagawea, it's like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
What is happening that people would do this? You know, what is happening to our children?
Yeah. Yep. Right. And she also brought up, I'm pretty sure it was her, you hear all this bad stuff. Oh, my goodness. So-and-so was a slave owner. Well, what about all the good things that those people did? Somehow
right.
that gets buried under all of this social injustice issues now, you know?
Right.
And
right.
So
and there were social injustices. And the culture was totally different then. Totally
yeah.
different. And it
yeah.
takes understanding the whole story. The fact that even when the Declaration of Independence was penned, some of the delegates, the Continental Convention, some of them tried to put in there to abolish slavery. But
right.
the southern states balked at that, and they did not want that to happen. So it's not like people weren't aware or didn't try to end
mm-hmm.
that. Because they knew in their hearts it was wrong. But at the same time, it was so embedded in the culture. And the southern states felt like, you know, there were more people black people in the South than there were white people. And they felt
yeah.
like if they lost that, they would lose their living. So, it was a difficult choice and a difficult time. And they had to take it by steps. You know, they couldn't just get all that they wanted right away.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, this little discussion kind of leads into our next question, Elaine, and that is, it's obvious that writing a different time period takes hours and hours of research.
Yes.
What did you learn about the people of that time period that surprised you? Was there anything that, after doing your research, you're like, wow, I just didn't know that, or I didn't expect to find that?
Yes, there were, you know, there was more than one thing, but I'd say the thing that stands out the most was the fact of slavery in the northern colonies during the American Revolution. That shocked me because having grown up in Massachusetts, they never talked about that. It was like, oh, that was a southern problem, you know. I'm sorry, but it was actually a northern problem too. In fact, I never heard of the Triangle Trade until I saw the musical, 1776, the musical that came out, 30, 40 years ago. And such a great musical. And there is a song actually called The Triangle Trade. And it's a very haunting, haunting song. Have either of you seen that at all?
I have not.
No?
No.
You can even go on YouTube and plug in Triangle Trade. And it will bring up the video of that. It's a very, very haunting song. And it's about the fact that it would start out in Boston and in Newport, Rhode Island. And the ships would take off filled with rum. And then they would go to Africa and then barter that rum for slaves. And they buy the slaves and stuff them into the ships. Just horrible, horrible conditions. And then they would go across the ocean and begin to sell off these slaves to the Caribbean area, Jamaica and all that, and then go back up the coast and sometimes leave slaves here and there and go back up to Rhode Island where the molasses was so good, where they could make the rum. And then they'd start all over again. And that's where it got the term triangle trade because of the shape that formed. I was shocked. And the whole reason I even found out about this was because my son suggested to me, he says, Mom, you ought to write about the black soldiers in the American Revolution. And I said, what a great idea. I said, that's a great idea. So that's what I did. And when I started researching it, I was really quite shocked. I did not know. There was a lot I didn't know. But that's the great thing about people who go to the trouble to, you know, investigate all of that and write nonfiction so that we can learn about that. And then I can incorporate those factual pieces of history into a fictional tale by putting real people in those scenarios. So brings it more to life, really, at least for me, it does.
It absolutely does. I find that true in any kind of story. You know, you pick out those elements of truth and you don't know. They're almost, you know, as you weave them together, it almost seems the real things couldn't be, right? That can't be true.
Right, right. And yet it was, yeah.
Yeah.
I know.
Elaine, how do you weave your faith into your writing? As we talk about how to make things come alive, how do you weave your faith
sure.
into your writing?
Well, it really has to be done naturally. And it can't, I remember one time reading a book years ago where it just seemed like all of a sudden everyone went to church and someone shared the gospel and the person got saved. And I thought, whoa, it was kind of out of left field. So I just thought this has to seem normal and natural. It can't come out of the blue and catch people off. It has to be just like life is. Well, let's say a friend would come up to you and just, you know, start sharing about a problem and you say, you know, I'd like to pray for you about that and things like that. But life is far more complicated than sometimes it's made to be in books that you read. People, you know, and God bless them. I mean, they're trying to put across the Christianity in their story. But at the same time, if it doesn't seem normal and natural to the story, it's not going to work. And plus, people don't suddenly become good people or suddenly become bad people. There's always a backstory. And there's always, like, I think one of you was just reading Love's Kindling. And the protagonist in that, she was very bitter for a long time. And
yes.
And you could see why, you know. I mean, things have not gone well for her. So to try to downplay that or make it seem like it was less of a problem for her to deal with only would make it less significant, or then other people can't really relate to it because people have been through really tough things. And if you're not portraying that in the book or in your story or whatever, you know, you're not being realistic and you're not helping other people to see things from a different point of view.
Right.
Absolutely. And did you, in your research or in any way, are you able to tell from a religious, and I'm using my fingers to make quotes around religious.
Right, right.
The revolutionary period, were people more religious or not?
Well, they went to church a lot.
Okay.
for some, it's probably similar to today in that many people were Christian and many people who went to church probably were not Christian. When I write situations like in the Deer Run series, I wrote about people going to church and then you've got people over there who are, oh, they're gossiping about people and everything, you know, and I thought, you know, people need to understand just because other people go to church, it doesn't make them a Christian. And walking through the doors doesn't change your heart. Jesus has to change your heart. But the churches that were in the area, especially in New England, they were mainly the congregational churches, at least in Massachusetts. There were other denominations in various colonies. The southern colonies were more Church of England, and the Pennsylvania colonies, there were a lot of Quakers. So it just kind of depended on where the original location was of the people who moved here. But it was really considered necessary to a town for people to be in church. In fact, there were some towns where they'd be in trouble with the sheriff if they didn't go to church.
So wow.
It's kind of funny to think about it in this day.
Yeah.
But it was a serious thing not to go to church. Obviously, there were some people who it was just more of a social thing because the people there worked hard and they worked probably 6 days a week if they were farmers. And the Sabbath day was their day of rest. And so they could get together and talk and visit their family. It's hard to say what the numbers of actual Christians were. So I guess you could say that they were more religious, quote unquote, like you were saying, in the fact that they did go to church every Sunday. Yes.
Okay. Very good.
You know, I think too, Elaine, because I'm trying to write 19th century historical, and one thing that is always in the back of my mind, you didn't hear people talking about a relationship with Christ like we do today. I think it was more, you better follow the rules.
Yeah.
Don't you
a lot of rule following.
You need a relationship with the Lord. I don't think you heard that kind of terminology back
No.
in
No, I have not. Occasionally I like to read, like, you know, Jonathan, what was his last name? The preacher. It was so wonderful. Jonathan,
Edwards.
to read the original sermons of a lot of the pastors back then, the preachers, it's really amazing. I mean, they were very clear cut. They were sometimes harsh, but it was like, you know, you have to have a relation. Well, I'm using that word, but you have to be right with God. You know, you can't be sinning. You can't be this, that, and the other thing. So, yeah, I think to say that word, I wouldn't use it that way. But they certainly read the Bible. They either had the King James Version, or there's another one that they had, but that was really considered older, like when the Pilgrims came. So I would definitely think that the King James Bible would be the main one that they had, but it would be more like reading the Bible and believing what they had in the Bible more so than saying, I asked Jesus into my heart or something like that. I never see that phrase used. And I try to find as many first person primary source documents as I can. And that gives you more of a feel for how people spoke about things back then.
Yeah.
It's always so interesting to read how they spoke. It's really, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just thought I'd mention that I have to be careful.
Oh, sure.
You can't use this modern language. Well, that's true of any subject, not just faith, but you have to be really careful.
Yeah. I mean, I don't even think that they used that in terms of husbands and wives having a relationship with each other. I think it was just assumed they had some kind of relationship with each other. But
Yep.
It's really easy to throw in modern day terminology, you know, into the older ones. And that's why I love reading. There is a first person account of a soldier in the American Revolution. His name was Joseph Plum Martin. And it's awesome to read because you get a feel for how they spoke. You get a feel for how people thought back then. You get a feel for so many things, and anything that you can read that is a primary source, meaning the first person account of it, that is just so educational. And I love it. It's so interesting. It's so different than how we speak or write today.
Yes.
Ladies, at this point, we're going to go to a short break. During break, I remind listeners that you are listening to Step Into the Light with host Jean Alfieri and Patty Sheen. Our guest today is Elaine Marie Cooper. Elaine is a historical novelist. She has 7 novels to her credit. We've been discussing her writing career and her writing history and her love for the Revolutionary War time period and things like that. She is also the author of a book titled Bethany's Calendar, and we will be talking about that. That is a very personal memoir that Elaine wrote, and she'll talk to us about that in the second half of the show. If you would like to listen to the show again, or of course, we always hope that you will refer it to friends and family, go to my website, which is Patty Sheen, that is spelled PattiSheene.com. There you will find a Blog Talk Radio tab at the top of the page, and under that tab is a link to all of our shows that we have recorded to date. And also under each show is a more information tab, and that's where you will find information about each of the guests that we've hosted on the show. We encourage you to check out our newer shows, our older shows, because we are very blessed to always have very interesting guests. Let's get back to our interview here. Elaine, as you know, here on Step Into the Light, our guests do share a time in their lives that was difficult and sometimes very dark, and how they found their way back to light. I happen to know that you have had an experience like that in your life. Would you share what you are comfortable sharing of that experience with us today?
Of course, yeah. In 2003, my daughter started acting very strangely, and it was really very strange. And the upshot was that when we had to take her to the hospital, they took an MRI of her brain and come to find out she had a very bad brain tumor. I was totally shocked. I mean, I was a nurse, but I did not see any signs or symptoms of that. You know, I think sometimes when you're so close to a person, you don't really see those those kinds of symptoms objectively, you just think, oh, it's stress or something like this. But it totally threw us into turmoil. I mean, Bethany and her two brothers and my husband and I, we were just in shock. So, you know, they immediately took her into surgery and did a biopsy on her brain, and come to find out it was a grade 2, but it was the type of tumor that would come back even after treatments. And basically they did not give us any hope for a long-term survival. It's hard to describe the shock waves that went through our whole family. And it's so interesting because you think there's certain things that you worry about over your kids through the years. I was worried about one of them getting abducted or something like that. And I worried about that so much more than ever did I worry about cancer. And to suddenly find out that one of my kids had cancer, not only cancer, but brain cancer, which was changing her personality and changing so much about her, it was just devastating. I was working at the time, so I had to take a leave of absence from work and take care of her, because when she came home from the hospital, she was unable to care for herself. She had become like a child. So it was like having a young child again to take care of. She had the illness for a year and 9 months, and it was such a tough time. You know, you're clinging to the Lord, but you always feel like your fingers are damp and slipping. It's just something I would never wish on anybody.
Thank you for sharing that with us, Elaine.
Sure.
I know that it has to have been a very devastating experience for you and your family, and we appreciate you sharing that with us and with our listeners today.
Sure.
How is your family getting along now, Elaine? Everybody who is left, I don't know how else to put it, but to say left behind.
Sure. No, I understand. We're doing well. It's still difficult, though. It was the hardest, I think, of the two boys. It was the hardest on our younger son, because he and Bethany were very close and always were good buds, you know, so they got along so well, you know, went to movies together and just hung out together and stuff. But it was also hard on our older son, because they had become closer. The older they got, they became closer. So it was really tough on our older son, Ben. And at the same time as she was diagnosed with that, our older son, Ben, was waiting to find out if he was going to be accepted into the military, into the officer's candidate school. And all this was going on at the same time. It was like, Lord, okay, I can't take anymore. But he actually was accepted into that and ended up going into the military, because this was just after 9/11. It was just a tough time. So he had that to kind of take him away from the scene of the crime, shall we say, you know, where everything was going on. So he didn't have to be there to, you know, be there for the daily MRIs, not daily MRIs, but the daily visits to the doctor's office, the chemotherapy, the radiation treatments and all of that. But Nathaniel wasn't there either, because he was in an internship out of state. But when the boys came home, they were a tremendous help. They would keep her laughing, as only brothers can do, and just be real silly. But nowadays, we still all remember her so well. And what I really love about the boys is that they talk to their children about Aunt Bethany. And that just means so much to me, that they don't want her to be forgotten, you know, and they have her picture up in their house. And they talk about her as though she is their aunt, because she is, and as though she's still a part of their lives, because really she is. It's just such a blessing. So they're doing well. I think it was just a blessing from God that when the triplets were born, it was two boys and a girl, just like I had two boys and a girl. And it was like, okay, thank you, Jesus. You know, it was just a wonderful, wonderful gift. Have our first grandchildren be two boys and a girl. And then with the two little ones that have come since then, you know, they are just such a blessing to us too. And I just, you know, I don't know if you ladies are grandmas or not, but oh, it's just the best. I just love being a grandma. They call me geeky. So I love being a geeky. But you know, they're doing well. They really are doing well. It's hard though, especially for my younger son, because
his little girl was born with a misshapen foot, and they thought it just needed to be realigned. Yeah, realigned or reshaped in some way to work properly. But then when they went in there, believe it or not, she had cancer in her foot.
Oh, no.
Yes. So they had to remove her foot, which was devastating to Nathaniel and to his wife. They took it off. But here's the miracle, ladies. This is unbelievable. Because of the type of tumor it was, they just knew that she was going to have chemotherapy, and they began to do the checks, because that type of tumor is normally found in either the brain or the abdomen or the chest. So they checked her everywhere. There was no cancer, nothing. God had healed our little granddaughter. I'm telling you, thank you, Jesus. It was truly a miracle. And, you know, I've told the kids, I've said, you know, her whole life, her missing foot is going to be a testimony of God's healing power upon her. Because it's just amazing to me. She continues to have to go for checkups about every 6 months. And she continues. She's almost four now. And this happened when she was a year old, the surgery. So it's been 3 years now, no sign of cancer. And they had the chemotherapy scheduled for her, but they actually canceled the chemotherapy treatment. I've never heard of that before.
No,
I've never heard of that before. And it's just like, thank you, Lord. You know, such a blessing. Such a blessing.
Thank you so much for sharing your deepest emotions over this, the tragedy of your daughter's passing, and then the miracle of your granddaughter is just really special that you share that with us. Thank you.
It is just awesome. Oh, you're so welcome. I will shout it from the housetops and the hilltops.
Elaine, what motivated you to move out of your established genre to write Bethany's Calendar?
Oh, I did not want to. No way did I want to write that book. In fact, when I first started writing my first book, people would say, oh, are you writing about your daughter? And I'd say, are you kidding me? There's no way I want to go through that again and revisit all of that. And I truly had no intention of writing her story. But then when I was at a writer's conference during the praise and worship time, I heard that little voice again in my heart. And I'm like, oh, no, I have to write about her. I have to write that book. And I didn't want to. I truly call it the book I never wanted to write. And so I knew then and there, when I heard that little voice again in my heart, I knew I was going to have to write it. But I was in the middle of writing another book, so I kept doing that. And I was planning for the next book. And I began to feel this little knock on my head saying, you're kind of being disobedient here. And I really felt convicted, and I truly did need to write the book. So on New Year's Eve, I don't remember what year it was, but on New Year's Day rather, I took out all of Bethany's diaries, and she had diaries from the time she was 6 years old until just before she got sick. And she just wrote amazingly. She had such a gift for writing. So I read through every single one of her diaries. And as I would find profound statements in her diaries, I would type them up and keep a whole list of them so that I could use those, because I knew I would want to use those in the book. But it just blew me away. It just, you know, seeing her maturity, not just maturity age-wise, but her maturity in the Lord, her mature walk of faith. It just inspired me. You know, I was like, I can't believe she is this mature in the Lord. And but God obviously had something special for her, and it was not perhaps what we want or wanted, but it was an amazing, amazing ministry that he had for Bethany, clear up through her death. And
And he continues to use that in this book that you wrote.
Yes. Yes, he does. And she always wanted to be a writer, so I thought this is great because I can insert things that she has written, and now she's a published writer.
Yeah.
So, I can't even imagine how painful that had to be to go through, and the length of time it would take just for you to process that. And was it, did you find it to be healing, or was it just truly painful throughout?
It was both, but I say, comparing the two, I say it was mostly painful. It really inspired me again, like, you know, how mature she was, but I was very writing it out, you know, you're just, and then of course you have to go through edits and all the edits, every time you're editing something or rereading it again, you're having, I'm crying again, you know,
right.
Oh, this is not fun. But I really think afterwards, you know, it's funny because people talk about closure, and I just kind of cringe when people talk about closure, because it's like, you never get over losing a child. There are certain people that you lose that you never quite get over. It might be your mother, your father, whoever you're super close to. But when it comes to a child, that's a part of you. And you can't have closure from that. But it was healing. And to know that her life meant something to so many other people, it is amazing to me how many people the Lord has brought into my life, either through Facebook or through other friends who have lost children to brain tumors. And I'm like, this is bizarre. This is just, I can't even begin to understand this. But I've sent the book to many people. And I remember getting a note back from one mother who I had sent a book to. And she said, I want you to know that it's been 1 year since my daughter died. She said, and I finally took out your book and I read it. And she said, it changed my life.
Wow.
And I was so touched by that, you know, that she could feel that way. I don't know what it was that I had written in there that helped her in some way, or maybe multiple things. I don't know.
Sure.
But for her to say that to me, but she had to wait till the right time. I always tell people, you don't have to read this right now. Just read it when you're ready to.
Yeah.
And then God can use it, you know, and he has used it many, many times. And I'm so grateful for that.
That is wonderful.
I had the opportunity to read the book, and it was extremely intense. There was just, and I'm not saying in a bad way. I mean,
yeah,
all that you went through just came through so clearly, Elaine.
Elaine, how did you lay out this book? How was it designed? I mean, how does it read? Is it chapter by her age? Is it chronological? How is it laid out?
Oh, the book is laid out in chapters, and I start each chapter with a section of Bethany's diary that will fit for that particular chapter. And then at the end of each chapter, I put a note to self and a note to others. And one of, I think this is the second or third chapter, my note to self says, he himself has said, I will never leave you or forsake you. Therefore, we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? And that's from Hebrews 13:5-6. Then the note to others says, pray for wisdom in times of confusion and withhold judgment. For now we see indistinctly as in a mirror, but then face to face. Now I know in part, but then I will know fully as I am fully known. 1 Corinthians 13:12. There was one chapter that I remember, and I'm trying to think exactly. I should have put a paper in there. But the one chapter that I always remember that gets me is the one with our neighbor who was a Vietnam vet. I don't know if you've read through the whole book or not, but let's see. But what it was that Bethany really wanted to get to an event. She would go to an adult daycare where there were other adults with brain injuries. She went once or twice a week, and they were going to have a picnic just before the summertime. And she really, really wanted to go. But at this point in her life, she was getting so weak, she could barely walk. And we had 3 or 4 steps out front that she had to get down in order to get out to the car in the driveway, which wasn't very far away, but it seemed like a mile because of her difficulty in moving. We got out to the steps, and then she just sort of sat down on the steps. And I was so exhausted at this point. I'd been taking care of her for over a year. And I said, Bethany, are you sure you want to go to this? And she says, yes, I really want to go. And then all of a sudden I heard a voice behind me and I turned around and it was our neighbor. And he was never a very friendly man. He was kind of rough and always smoked too much and, you know, wasn't someone who was pleasant to always be around. But he said, "Do you need any help?" And I said, "Yes, I could really use some help, a lot." And so he helped her. He, without any trouble, he hiked her up from the steps and helped her down the steps and got her into the car for me. And I just looked at him and I just said, "Thank you so much." I said, "This means so much to her." And he went back home acting like it was no big deal. You know, I wrote in the book, I said, "I don't know if he was a hero in Vietnam, but today he was a hero to me." And it was just such a tender moment from someone who I did not expect something from. Mm-hmm. And God just really showed me the heart of people that day. So
how lovely. It was
very special.
How lovely. And I bet it was special for him, too. Does he know that he appears in your book?
You know, I don't know, because I think they moved away and I didn't. And I think that was before I wrote the book. So I don't know if he knows that he's in the book.
Yeah,
because I lost touch with him, with his wife. Yeah.
Wow. I enjoyed the little humorous section there, Elaine, when you talked about the people that came to build a ramp or something.
Oh, yeah.
And you were in your jammies.
I was in my jammies with my robe on, and I'm holding it together at my neck, trying to be modest. And there's three guys out there. "Oh, didn't they tell you we were coming?" I said, "No." And they came to build a ramp for her wheelchair, and it was wonderful, but it was kind of unexpected. There were lots of funny events that happened, and I didn't want to leave those humorous things out of the book, because there's always a balance, and God always does bring that balance into any situation, even the painful ones.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, that's one of the beautiful things about our Lord. He does.
Yes.
He does find ways to put humor into even some of the most difficult situations.
Elaine, I did forget that I had my mind so much on those little statements from Bethany's diary, but you had the notes to self and notes to others, so that kind of covers what advice do you have for others who may be facing a similar trial, because you handled that very well. So
I don't think you
should bother with that question either. So
I say thank you, but honestly, I feel like God wrote that book through me, because it takes a long time to get a book written and then submitted and then accepted. And then before it gets to print, the whole thing usually takes long. This was the fastest book I had ever written, and it went to press faster than any book I've ever written. So obviously,
wow.
I'm sure God was just up there twiddling his thumbs going, "Okay, Elaine, get going, get this done, because I'm ready. I have this all set and ready to roll," and I just wasn't cooperating. So I'm sure he was just waiting for me to cooperate.
I'm sure you're right. And so my question for you is, who is this book for? Is it for people who are going through the same situation, parents of people going, is that truly who it's designed to touch?
Well, that would certainly be some of the audience members, but it's also for people who are doing any kind of caregiver role,
okay,
because it truly touches on a lot of issues that caregivers go through, the stress, the anger at times, the frustration, seeking out help from other people, which sometimes you don't even know who to ask help for. But, I try to direct people to seek out ways to help, seek out resources, to help them. And there's so many things more now that people have, like the caregiving site, the what is it called, Caring Bridge, that they have, where people can, keep other people informed about what's going on with their loved ones. And they didn't have that back when Bethany was sick. So it was really difficult trying to keep everyone up to date on things. So it was just, a lot of things have improved, and the medications have improved. There's so many improvements since then. But it's really for anyone going through probably any kind of cancer, especially for caregivers, but also for, you know, Pat, I remember there was a, I think she was a, some kind of a, oh, I'm trying to think what her role was, but she was some kind of a psychologist, I believe, who worked with people who had, I think, those who were grieving. And she said, this should be on the desk of every single pastor in America. And so really, pastors can really benefit from a book like this because it truly helps them understand what families are going through. Because so many times, you know, they'll see you at church and they say, well, how are you doing? And you go, oh, okay, or oh, fine, or whatever. And we don't talk about it at moments like that. We talk about it when we feel comfortable and safe and in private. We don't want to talk about it, you know, on the way into church and things like this. So I hope it encourages pastors and others in the church to realize that just because a person is saying they're doing okay, doesn't mean they're doing okay.
Sure.
And I also offer ways that they can help people, you know, a simple meal. I had one dear lady in our church. She would send a card every single week to Bethany and I to tell us she was thinking about us and praying for us. And it was just a delight. I mean, it just was so encouraging to know someone was thinking about us. You know, you feel very isolated in that situation. You can't always make it to church.
Yeah.
So
I heard a quote. I heard a quote the other day. It was, just because she carries it well doesn't mean the load isn't heavy.
Oh, and that really, so true.
Yeah, I know. It really touched me. I'm like, and there you have it.
Yeah, absolutely. So true.
Definitely.
Well, I think on a last note, I would like to ask you, Elaine, having read Love's Kindling.
Oh, Love's Kindling. Yeah, you said you had read that.
Please do tell me what's next on your agenda for writing, and please tell me there's a sequel to that book.
Oh, there is. You'll be happy to know. There is.
Good.
Yes, I have a contract for two more books in that series, and the series is called Dawn of America. And Love's Kindling was the first book. First book, and then the second book is called Winter's Ravage, and that's what I'm working on now. And then the third book is called Courier's Return. So hopefully before too much longer, you will see those books come out. And yes, I don't want to say goodbye to Zadok and Orinda just yet. So I want their story to go on.
Well, you know, part of what really attracted me to that book when I was looking through, because I wanted to read one of your books besides Bethany's Calendar before the show. And I love Zadok. I can't even remember his last name now. What was it?
It was Wooding.
Yeah. Zadok Wooding. I said, who could not love a character named Zadok Wooding? I've got to read this book.
You know, it is tricky finding characters, but I always look up actually characters from the era. You know, I look up boys' names and girls' names from that era. So that they're actually, and both of those names, Orinda and Zadok, are fairly typical names from back then. They're not very typical now, but they were back then.
Orinda, I don't think I had ever heard, but, I hadn't heard Zadok either, but I said, oh, man, you know, those names are just awesome. I've got to read this one. So.
Well, good. Thank you.
And then it turned out to be one of your newer books, too, so that was great.
That is great. Thank you for reading it. Believe me, I never take for granted that people want to read my books. So it's always a pleasure and a joy to hear people like my books, to write a positive review or anything, you know, and so even if it's a review that's not positive, I'm willing to read it and learn from it. So I'm always happy to know that people want to read my books. So thank you.
It was well worth the read, and I liked your themes in there. Well, the themes that I saw were, number one was the forgiveness and Orinda's bitterness, and the other one was her false self-image.
Yes.
You know,
she
had
totally.
That self-image all the time, you know, and
can you imagine?
Themes, and there were others in there as well, but I really enjoyed it.
Yep. You zoned in on the two. You've got it. Very true. And those are two very real stresses these days for people.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely.
Trying to be able to forgive people and how we view ourselves.
Yes.
So, very much so.
That about wraps it up, ladies. Elaine, thank you so much for spending time with us today. You shared so much with us and our listeners, then you definitely shared your heart.
I feel so honored that you'd ask me to be on your program. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care.
It was a joy to have you here today, and thank you so much. Listeners, in closing, we all encounter dark periods in our lives to one degree or another. During those difficult times, strive to seek the light, knowing that when we allow it to shine through, it is so much brighter than we remembered. Thank you so much for listening today. I'd like to remind you to please go to pattysheen.com. Again, that is spelled PATTISHENE.com. There you will find links to this show and all of the shows that we have recorded to date. You will also find Elaine's website, any social media that she may have, as with all of our guests, under the More Information tabs. Until next time, God bless.
There is a candle in every soul, some brightly burning, some dark and cold. There is a spirit who brings a fire, ignites a glare.